This is what you missed by not being on Tumblr.com during its heyday.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Fish don't have feelings. Excuse me, what? Are you fucking dumb? Haven't you seen Nemo? And ghosts are real. By denying their existence, you're just gaslighting people who have seen ghosts IRL. The top 9 dog breeds that would call my aunt a slut. The term four eyes is an ableist slur.
Tumblr did have some neat things. You know, the format did lend itself quite nicely to some funny things with the reblogs and everything.
Oh, yeah. And, like, the fact that you can just do numbers by posting your favorite screen caps of whatever weird interactions you have on Twitter.com now shows that it at least had some value.
Like, oh, yeah.
Rating Undertale characters based on how likely they would be to call me a slur.
Jesus.
It's like, Undyne would say it in anger, but then apologize profusely afterward.
Mm-hmm.
Alphys doesn't know any slurs. She just watches anime. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to Southpaws, episode 470. I don't even know what to call this episode. Like,
I'm like, oh, you're going right in there, huh?
Well, I mean, I'm saying some things that are perfectly suited to the podcast, and I might as well include it.
Just, you know, it's when you have that slow start, you get the head in, and then all of a sudden, you're all the way to the roof.
And then you're like, holy shit, I just friction burned my dick. So, I'm Saverin.
I'm Fuzzle.
And this is Southpaws. Shiva is finally caught up with her work. She is done with her various surgeries and still feeling very, very tired. So hopefully she'll be able to rejoin us soon, but given how she has had a hell couple of months, she is still not able to join us. You can only take so much painkillers and still be functional, so she's not here this week. But we have some topics this week. Fuzz and I, we both watched the Jenny Nicholson Bronies a Fandom Autopsy video that we can discuss for a little bit.
Yeah, totally.
The army has retreated from Twitch, and Twitter
they've been routed from a fucking gaming streaming platform.
And Twitter is hoping to kill itself, and I can only encourage it. So, yeah, just at the top of it this week, the U.S. Army has retreated from Twitch. They have decided they're going to refocus their efforts on recruitment from Twitch.com.
Mm-hmm.
Today on Twitter, esports consultant and journalist Rod Slasher Breslau said that due to recent media coverage of fake giveaways and potentially unconstitutional bans, the U.S. Army esports team has paused social activity, streaming on Twitch, and official activations with Twitch, including participating in upcoming Twitch Rivals events, further noting that the Army might not resume these sorts of marketing efforts until spring 2021. We talked last week about how the U.S. Army, and now the Navy, and I believe Air Force as well, have all been doing various streaming efforts and recruiting children. Basically like, yeah, you can go to this website and sign up to win a $200 Xbox Series S Pro 2 controller. You know, some extremely expensive, modular, fancy-ass controller. And in fact, the information they were giving them just gave them permission to contact these children once they were of age to join the military.
Yeah.
They could text you and email you and perhaps show up at your school and talk to you. So that's not cool. And they got in trouble for that. And, well, they've decided that they're backing off. And as of yesterday at 5 p.m., it was noted that the U.S. Army Twitch account has not streamed in almost 2 weeks. The Navy was still doing it, but people were harassing those channels to oblivion, asking about various boat crimes, I'm sure. And the U.S. Army, or the U.S. Air Force, I don't know what they've been doing, but it's like, again, the military really should not be recruiting children in this manner. So it's good that just a tiny little bit of effort and pushback against the military there has gotten them to stop. Because,
yeah,
it's free for them to do, but they still have to direct a little bit of resources to it. And at this point, their channels became like completely unusable to them for their desired purpose. So they stopped doing it, which is really the only real way you can fight back against the government and military is keep making it too expensive for them. And this has generally worked in Vietnam, Korea, Twitch, Iraq, technically.
Yeah, I was going to say, U.S. Army, U.S. military faces its worst defeat since Vietnam at the hands of Twitch users.
Pretty much. You know, they pogged themselves into an early grave.
So what happens to the soldiers that were, like, running those? I mean, that just joined the military solely to recruit people via Twitch. They're like, wait, I'm going to have to go and fight now? I only joined to trick teenagers into doing this.
Well, the thing is, the people that were doing this were also recruiters who are trained to talk to people like that. So, like, these are lifers, people that have been doing this for a while that are very invested in getting kids involved. These are not, like, dudes that joined to just be on the military esports team.
Yeah, yeah.
That's.
I was reminded today that you can actually join the military at 17 with parental consent. So
that doesn't sound like some very good parenting, honestly.
They start targeting these kids at like 15, 16, and then when you're 17 or 18, especially if you're in an ROTC program or something like that, then they totally have their eyes on you.
And they got JROTC too, which is junior, which is
ROTC.
Yeah.
Which I think is high school, like freshmen and sophomores. And the ROTC is like the juniors and the seniors. It's something like that. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah. So at 17 is when you can join the JROTC. And you must have parental consent, it says.
It must be only like juniors and seniors, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, ROTC is short for Reserve Officers Training Corps, which is a military training program for students who are currently enrolled in a college or university. And then JROTC is for high schoolers.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, that's what it
was. I had to Google that shit and be like, all right, what exactly is this? Because I didn't go to a traditional high school, so I don't know.
Oh.
I never had to interact with those people.
My sister was actually in the JROTC, and, like, she'd gone from, like, goth, stoner, kind of grunge type to really buttoned down JROTC, and then I guess she was like, fuck that, when they asked her to actually join, and then she became a goth chick for, like, 10 or 15 years.
Hey, whatever works.
And now she's full-on suburban mom with a career, so it was really interesting evolution watching her grow up. But yeah, like they tried to recruit me after I scored really high on the ASVAB, and they took one look at me and were like, you need to lose 20 pounds. And I'd be like, oh, see me in 20 years.
It's like,
see how far I have fallen.
It's like, telling me that I need to lose 20 pounds to join the military is not encouraging me to lose 20 pounds. That's encouraged me to go get some pizza for lunch.
Yeah.
Like, I got my traditional Thursday Whataburger today, and I'm feeling pretty fat and happy, honestly. It's like the one time a week that I go out and get food from a restaurant.
So, on this topic, let me recommend this week's episode of Behind the Bastards.
Oh, yeah?
It is about Pat Tillman, who was the NFL linebacker who, after 9/11, decided that he wanted to join the Army, and that his football career basically felt meaningless when people were dying on his behalf. So signed up and joined the Army, and got killed not too far into his Army career in a friendly fire incident, which the government, the Bush administration, famously tried to cover up. And they even gave him an award for being killed by an enemy combatant, and that was before it came out that he was actually killed by friendly fire. And anyway, obviously, Pat Tillman's not the bastard. The bastard part is like, Robert, the host, goes into all the details of all the people in the government and behind the scenes and how they tried to, like, cover this up.
They used it for major propaganda gains by, like, oh, this man, he sacrificed everything. He gave up his career in the military to serve the country. You should do it, too. And then, he was fragged by his cohorts because he was against the war in Afghanistan, actually.
They also, he didn't actually bring that up, actually, but they brought up that, like, Bush wanted to mention him in a speech, so they put this out, and his parents found out he was dead via Bush's speech.
Well, that's like, fucked.
And what's fucked up is that earlier that year, the Bush administration had actually put in a rule that said that you have to let families have at least 24 hours of private grieving time before making any kind of public statement about a soldier who's been killed in action. So they broke their own rule there. And then the other thing that they fucked up was once it had been determined that he was killed by friendly fire, they were supposed to call, the Army was supposed to go and talk to the parents and tell them directly, but they were beaten there by reporters who immediately, like, stuck microphones in his mother's face and were like, you know, how do you feel that your son was killed by friendly fire? And she's like, what?
What?
So, like, the army fucked up on, like, every level imaginable. It fucked up shit, too. I didn't know that his body was delivered naked in a pine box. Like, they took his uniform and everything and burned it. And it's like, that is the Robert's guest was actually a former army soldier. He's like, yeah, that's not standard procedure at all. I can't imagine why the person doing that, who was ordered to do that, didn't say anything. Like, this is kind of fucked up, but okay, whatever.
Yeah, you know? Basically, you should go and give that episode of Behind the Bastards
a yeah, it's really interesting. You know, if you need another reason to hate the U.S. military and the Bush administration, then totally listen to it.
So here is something of a follow-up to a story I think we mentioned a couple weeks ago, where we said that, hey, the Pentagon has banned Confederate flags from military bases.
Yes, I read the follow-up on that.
And I'm like, what the follow-up to it is that, yes, they've banned the Confederate flag, but they've also banned any non-military or non-U.S. flag. So the measure would prohibit flags other than the U.S. flag, state flags, and military-related flags. So you could hang a unit flag or a Navy flag or a state flag or the U.S. flag, but any other flag, be it Confederate or a pride flag, are prohibited. So
yeah,
they did not do the limited, no, you can't fly the Confederate flag. They just said any flag that is not these specific ones is just prohibited.
They basically did a very fine flags on both sides are now banned situation.
So that's cool. Thank you, Pentagon. Very nice.
Yeah, I couldn't own up to, like, this is some white supremacist racist bullshit, and we're going to ban it. They were just like, no, all non-military flags. So, yeah, fuck them. I think that goes for embassies, too. I think they said that went for bases, like, and embassies.
Embassies flying pride flags during Pride Month are now prohibited from doing so. It's a very backwards way. Like, yeah, okay, we'll give you this little bit of, like, all right, you don't want the Confederate flags, but also, like, none of your queer shit. Like, great, thanks. So that's a bummer, but also not surprising given our government.
Nope.
So on the Twitter front, we have two stories. One, which didn't seem to do much other than rile up the QAnons.
Oh, that's right. They're banning all the QAnon shit, right? Well,
they banned 7,000 QAnon accounts and limited 150,000 others. But the thing is, that just got them into a frenzy. Like, I don't actually think that the QAnons are actually really getting squashed. Like, yeah, you take out 7,000 accounts and you limit a bunch of others, but now it's like, because it's a conspiracy theory, any attack against the conspiracy only reinforces people's belief in the conspiracy. I mean, yes, you get these crazies off your platform briefly, but also they're like, oh my god, Jack Dorsey's part of the deep state now. Oh my gosh, he's defending the cabal and all this other shit, right?
God.
So much like when the K-pop kids forced white supremacists to dance around and use various hashtags to try to get their White Lives Matter shit trending. And anytime they did, the K-pop, you know, it was a K-P-O-P, all caps, like as if it was a Korean, like, secret agency.
Yeah.
So, like, they've just modified their hashtags to be slightly different, and I'm sure they're still going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they're going to be playing a game of whack-a-mole with that for a while. I mean, it is good that the QAnons are getting slapped around because their shit is intensely dumb. It is entertaining to hear about from a, like, distance perspective, and only because none of my family members that I like have gotten into that shit. My parents are too smart for that shit. My grandparents, I don't really talk to them, but I'm pretty sure they're not either. So, like, they're a curiosity to me. I have not, like, lost a grandfather to them.
Right, yeah.
Because, like, I recently, you know, dropped QAnon Anonymous, a $5 a month Patreon pledge, and got downloaded, like, their 84 Patreon-only episodes, or, like, they talk about the conspiracy theories around QAnon and the various things that they're up to. And there has been all sorts of interesting yet slightly terrifying stories, like the merging of...
quick question. So are you listening to a QAnon podcast or a podcast about QAnon?
It's a podcast about QAnon.
Okay.
Dissecting their conspiracy theories.
God, I thought you were going in deep with the research or something. I'm going to be the next Robert Evans.
You know? I'm not that energetic. No, I'm letting someone else do the work and giving them $5 a month to download their, like, Patreon feed.
That's fair.
Yeah, like, they do the work, I'll give them $5, whatever. And so, yeah. They have episodes, like, the current episode is about, like, Trump's relationship with the CIA and how, like, the QAnons are like, oh, he's fighting the deep state and the CIA, and the analysis is actually, Trump's really friendly with the CIA. He actually visited them first when he got inaugurated and talked some hot shit. And then it's, like, talking about conspiracies, how people trying to sneak intelligent design creationism in, discussing, you know, the various QAnon movies that they try to put out, like Plandemic, and talking about the, like, dissecting that bullshit. And there's an episode on Ben Garrison being a nut. So,
oh, the cartoonist.
Yeah, the cartoonist who has to label
everything. They got us with a good time.
Yes. It's like, oh, you're going to teach kids comprehensive sex education? They're going to fall in a pit of, like, gayness and gender identity and abortion. Okay, cool.
What really was weird about that was, like, three of the four big scary things were activity, were an actual activity. It was, like, premarital sex, abortions, anal sex, and then the fourth was just gender identities. Like, and since it's plural, that would presumably also cover, like, cisgender male. So he's actually saying the whole concept of gender identities,
it's like,
is something you will do if you go left.
Defining yourself not purely by your genitals. Oh my god. What could you do? But yeah, so that's fine. That's just one of those things that, like, entertains me in, like, the I'm observing a train wreck from a distance type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing, though, is about Twitter that came out today was that Jack Dorsey is... Twitter says it's looking at subscription options as ad revenue drops sharply.
Mm.
It's like, on one hand, if you have to pay to use Twitter, I'm not going to fucking pay to use Twitter. Like, this website is free and it costs a huge amount of my psychic energy every day. Like, you wake up and get a punch to the brain. But on one hand, like, yes, if you have to pay to be there, that's going to slaughter their user base and you'll be free. But also kind of on the other... Like, if you have to pay to have an account and the paid accounts can filter out unpaid accounts, that would remove, like, 90% of the trolley assholes from your entire experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I still probably wouldn't do it, but the only sort of, like, silver lining is that you could just be like, yeah, the notifications from these people don't exist. They can't interact with me. It's like,
right.
This user says that unless you've paid Twitter $5 or whatever to make an account in the old somethingawful.com forum style.
Oh, yeah, you had to pay $10 to make an account and then they could take it away.
Yeah, they ban you. You got to pay another $10 to get back on.
Right. I think it would actually be healthier if I could pay Twitter $5 a month to not let me on Twitter.
I mean, you could just deactivate your account and let it die. I mean, it's easy to do, but...
No, it's so hard.
Yeah, it is kind of hard, because, like, even if you want to cut down on your tweeting, you still end up finding yourself looking at it. It's like, no! Social media, it's an addiction, it's bad!
Yeah, I need to try to slow down my usage of it again. Like, but, you know, I have company accounts on there, so, you know. I guess I could just unfollow everybody on a company account and be like...
And be like, this account is going to be for announcements only. Please follow us for announcements related to books from FurPlanet.com. I mean, right, that would be a valid way to do it.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because, like, yeah, Twitter today was slightly entertaining because you could see people's reaction to the Xbox, like, first-party stream video that they posted today, which talked about some of the cool stuff that's coming up and a bunch of new stuff that nobody had heard of. But also, you know, you've got stuff that's, you know, not fun at all. So it really is 50-50. It's like, it's good to stay, like, abreast of what's going in the world outside of what the mainstream media is posting. Because, like, you know, there's still protests and all that shit in Portland still going on, but the media is not talking about it until they are forced to do it.
I know over the last couple of years, like, or more than that, really, but I've learned of shit on Twitter hours, sometimes days before it's shown up on any mainstream or even semi-mainstream news site. It's a valuable news resource in a lot of ways. And I think it's only so bad right now because the world is in a really bad confluence of shitty events, you know, between police brutality being on the rise, the president being who the president is, COVID this year, Brexit in Britain, it being an election year also, it's just, it's all come together to make a massive steaming pile on Twitter. Might not always be this bad, but right now it's particularly bad. It's heinous, yo.
Indeed.
Speaking of which, Bill and Ted 3 coming out this year.
Yeah, that one looks pretty interesting. Like, it's the kids that they cast as Bill and Ted's children are, they look a lot like their dads in terms of the story. And, like, death shows up and all this other nonsense about it. Like, God.
Yeah.
Because I'm watching those movies when I was a kid. Back when they had what? That was George Carlin, right?
Yeah. He played Rufus, the guy from the future.
Yeah.
Showed them how to use the time machine.
With his phone box.
Mm-hmm.
Not a police box, but a phone box.
That's right.
And so, like, yeah, I saw that trailer today, and I was like, that looks fun. Like, it'll come out eventually. Like, it'll be streaming on demand in September.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, like, I don't care if I have to pay $20. I mean, if both Panther and I are watching a movie, that's cheaper than us buying tickets. So, whatever.
Yeah, most excellent.
Then we could watch it and talk about it. Woo!
You know, I might, like, watch the... I wonder if Ajax has seen the original movies. But I'll watch the first two and then be like, okay, it's time for part three.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love you. One positive thing to look out for in September.
Well, hey, you know, in late August, the third season of Agretsuka is coming out, so that's fun.
Yes, that was actual good news that I saw today.
Like, there's a unicorn character and Finico and all everybody else. And it's weird that they chose to, like, do sort of a Attack on Titan-style parody as the cover image for it. But you'd have to know that it was Attack on Titan parody to...
Oh, yeah, I'd have no idea.
Yeah, like, it's just... Sure, why not, you know? it's an anime reference. We're going to totally make giant Haida stretching out his hand. But yeah, third season of Agretsuka, that's cool. Looking forward to it.
Yep.
I look forward to both the show itself and then the resurgence of porn involving the characters, which is nice. you know, need to echo porn and... There was that one series that Tempo wrote that was like a...
The three of them in a poly relationship,
with Ritsuko, Finico, and Haida all together. It was really cute. Had some nice accompanying art and done in the style of a group text conversation. So I look forward to more good content shit like that. That's the shit I want to see.
Yeah, that's the kind of content I don't pay Twitter for.
Exactly. I had to go to SoFurry for that. I think it was on SoFurry. I don't know. So, here's an interesting question, Fuzz. Did you know that you exist? Did you know
that I exist?
There is robust evidence that bisexual men exist.
Right, yeah. So I quote tweeted that article, and like, so this is an article that was posted recently on Twitter that scientists had finished up a study that shows strong evidence for the existence of bisexuality in men. Word's still out on women, I guess. I don't know. And I was surprised. I was like, this has got to be a clickbait headline or clickbait quote tweet, right? Like, that can't actually be as simple in the article. And I read it, and I was like, no, it really is that fucking basic. We now believe bisexuals exist. And this is debunking a study from... like 2006. A study in 2006 came to the conclusion that bisexual, like, sexual attraction to more than one gender doesn't exist. And I was in 2006, and I was like, what? So this was debunking the 2000 or re-examining the evidence of the 2006 surgery. They did it with showing men porn and taking measurements of their penile responses. And I don't know, maybe we didn't have sensitive enough clamps back in 2006 or whatever they're using for this. But I'm just like, wow, okay. And what's funny about this is that, like, this is like last week or the week before, there was Bisexuality Visibility Day. So we had that, and now we have actual scientific confirmation that we exist. I think the two are linked. Yeah, I should listen to some QAnon podcasts and find out for sure.
One of my mutuals at Trash Dog Nalen on twitter.com, is doing a like red pin green highlighter type overview review of the actual study. Like, they have a printout of it, and they're just like a big ass long thread talking about it. It's like, yeah, you know, bi people exist, but now we can scientifically prove that bi men exist. And it's like, you could have just fucking asked people, right? Like, you have sex with men, right? Yeah. You have sex with women, right? Yeah. You have sex with trans people too, right? I have. All right. Well, you're bi. Well, sure, whatever. These researchers... It's like,
did they just think people say that they're bi, but they only ever have sex with one gender? I mean, is that what they were thinking?
Are you thinking they're doing it for clout?
It's one of the worst ways to get clout, because a lot of bis are hated by a lot of people, both the straight community and in the gay community.
Yeah, because it's automatically assumed that that bi people will cheat by virtue of, like...
Yeah, people assume bi people cheat. People assume that you don't really care about gay rights because you can, quote, like, pretend to be straight.
Go stealth.
But, you know, if you're doing anything same-sex with anybody, then you're a queer and a faggot to the homophobic straight community. It doesn't matter if you also do stuff with the opposite gender. So, I mean, you really don't get, and a lot of people just don't understand bisexuality, which is really weird to me that they don't understand it, because it's a really fucking basic concept. Like, not, like, being either attracted to more than one gender or gender not being a factor in who you're attracted to. Like, those seem like really fucking basic concepts to me.
Yeah.
What I know, I'm just an old bi, so...
Yeah, I mean, it was drilled into our heads as children. Oh, you only have to like women or only have to like men. And, you know, depending on what set of genitals you got, that was the rules, right? Now, you know, here in the dark future of 2020, it's a lot blurrier of a line, or it's like, hey, you can like whomever. But it's taking academia further to get that understanding. Like, ideally, it shouldn't matter who you hook up with, but we still have to, like, kill off a few older generations to get to that point. So, you know.
I also wonder if, like, along with all the trans-related research that was destroyed by the Nazis in the 30s, a lot of just general queer-related studies and literature were, and essays were destroyed during that time, too. And that, you know, maybe that set us back on the bi and pan understanding as much as trans understandings.
Oh yeah, like when they burned the entirety of that place, it wasn't just the trans related research, it was everything gay. Like, it was, that whole place was declared degenerate art and therefore destroyed. You know, again, those famous book burning photos from Nazi Germany, they were burning the Institute for Sexual Research in Germany. And so, like, all this stuff that was being discussed and talked about in the 1920s and 30s and all that fun shit was just destroyed. And unlike today, you know, they didn't have digital record, and we have also a strong American Puritan history of, like, hiding, denying, redacting previously, you know, queer ass authors. And, you know, what's the joke? It's like, oh, these two warriors that were buried together in an embrace, they were both women. Oh, they were just such friends. And, like, the people that try to deny that Sappho, you know, why we have the word Sappho, was actually secretly straight, you know, because she, you know, it's
the old wood carvings of two topless women laying in a bed together,
gals being pals.
And it's like, yeah, it's a sleepover, you know, totally platonic friends. Just no wonder straight guys get the stereotype that girls sit around half naked playing with their boobs. Whenever, if that's the case, when you see art like that, they're like, oh no, they're not gay. That's just what girls do when they're hanging out together. They take off their tops and play with their boobs in a friendly platonic way.
I mean, boobs are fun to play with, so I mean, I wouldn't blame them if they did.
Yeah, you know, there's obviously nothing wrong with that, but it's just so silly when you see like ancient art like that, and the caption is like, we don't know why these women were half naked and cuddling and in bed, we just assume that they were friends.
You know, all the super gay Greek pottery, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, basically, yay, we have quote-unquote scientific proof that bisexuals exist. Congratulations, we're all valid. Yay.
Woo!
Science says we're real. And now we can be perceived by the straights. Oh no. Now that we've been determined to be real, they can all detect us. So, be on your guard.
Yeah, our bi shields are failing.
So, this was something you added to the chat that was pretty funny, that the libertarians are now canceling their own presidential candidate.
Yeah.
So, Joe Jorgensen, the libertarian candidate for president of the U.S., psychologist, senior lecturer at Clemson University, proud mother and grandmother, hockey player, blah, 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 and tweets on July 10th, it is not enough to be passively not racist. We must be actively anti-racist. Hashtag Black Lives Matter. Hashtag Vote Gold. Black Lives Matter needs standing in solidarity with the mourning black community as we fight together to end qualified immunity, police brutality, or sentencing disparities of the war on drugs, not support any of the organizations by that name. And,
So right quick, I want to point out, the first response to the tweet is Gary Johnson, who has been their presidential candidate multiple times. And he is agreeing with her. And this is the guy that got booed on stage at their convention for saying that we should have driver's licenses. So, like, it's interesting that their leaders are, much like the Democrats really, the leaders are way out of touch with their base. But their base is fucking crazy. Like, go on. But some of the responses are like, what do you mean by anti-racist?
I mean, honestly, if Joe Jorgensen's platform was taken up by the Democrats, you know, end qualified immunity, police brutality, etc., that'd be fucking cool. And the base would probably like that. Whereas it's flipped, where we've got Joe fucking Biden and the massively out of touch with the base, but very much in touch with his billionaire donor class. And the libertarians, their presidential candidate is actually like, yeah, that's kind of cool. But also the pedophiles are extremely mad in her replies. Like, people, I had so much hope for you. It seems like you've been lost now, too. Rethink the words what you just said. The more I read into Joe, the more I realize she's a Democrat wearing the veil of a libertarian. The Libertarian Party is a joke. And, like...
Well, that, I mean, that's correct, but...
Yeah. But it's like, let's see, so 6,100 replies on the first, 1,500 replies on the second. Like, it's so bizarre to see an actual, like, decent-ass statement just get ratioed by libertarians.
Yeah.
People being like, oh, she's been compromised. Or, you know, another reason Libertarian Party will never be taken seriously, vote conservative, hashtag Trump 2020. And it's like...
They really betray themselves with that. With yeah, that kind of like, shit, you know?
The mask is off. It's like, no, we just, you know, the ideal libertarian candidate would lobby so that their girlfriends wouldn't have to wear car seats, you know?
Yeah, they're just conservatives that want to fuck kids, but they were too poor to know Epstein, so they became libertarians.
And also they want weed.
Yeah.
But only for white people.
I'm assuming so, if they're like, they want to be able to cling to racism. Yeah, it's really weird to see their candidate get ratioed like that for being like, we should be anti-racist, which is what some of the further left Democrats are saying, you know, that it's not enough to be not racist, you should be anti-racist. And that's a pretty left statement, and she took that. And so, you know, good on her for saying that. I'm sure she has some shitty opinions in other ways that I don't agree with, but...
Yeah.
You know, I totally agree with that.
They make a statement and it's like, wow, that's impressive that people are so freaking... Oh. Stop. No. YouTube, stop.
This is starting to play her the video, well, I guess.
Yeah, as we're slowly moving on to the more fandom bullshit stuff, the Jenny Nicholson... The last BronyCon, a fandom autopsy discussion.
Right.
I had to go to my YouTube watch history, and I clicked and was like, oh no, it's playing some anime song. No, don't do that. And the thing is, because the capture is going to show up briefly in the audio here, it's Snow Halation from Love Live. It's anime. So the not really large topic, but it's a topic that we can discuss quite a bit, is that both Fuzz and I sat down and watched the Jenny Nicholson video, The Last BronyCon, a fandom autopsy.
Yes, we did.
And it was really interesting to basically have the fandom history recounted to you by someone who was also there.
Yeah, and also horse famous like you were.
Yeah, she was a voice actress in some very early, well, the Friendship is Witchcraft series. She was like the person doing vocals for that. And the video is basically her recounting her entire experience in the fandom. And it was really funny because, thank God, I was not directly referenced. And so that's really cool. I appreciate that. I was obliquely referenced in mentioning
this. I was going to say, you were obliquely referenced.
I was obliquely referenced twice, actually.
yes.
And that's fine. But, like, no directly, like, oh, yeah, and these guys that ran Bronyville, they were actually furries. And, like, one of them pretended he wasn't, but he's totally a furry. And the other one, he was just a total furry to start with. And I'm like, yeah. They didn't say that, but she could have. And it was interesting because she talks about the fandom from its inception to its death using the framing of the first to the last BronyCon. And she actually went to the one that was in Secaucus, New Jersey, which was the technically the third one, but it was the first quote-unquote real one. It was at an actual convention center. And then she also went to the last one that was in Baltimore.
Right.
And
Baltimore.
God. And it is really interesting to have someone who had kind of the same general arc of fandom, whereas, like, I punched out and left the community behind. You know, we still do this podcast, and I'm still involved in, you know, Furry Fiesta. But, like, when I punched out of the fandom halfway, I stopped doing Bronyville. We stopped doing that. We were still running the con. And then, you know, I was still on that ride until our contract ran out in 2017. But she kind of jumped out slightly before that, but still went to the last BronyCon. Whereas, like, you couldn't have paid me to go to last BronyCon, honestly.
But your legions of fans would have been there.
No. I think at that point, because, like, I was an ex-con chair by choice, I would have plenty of enemies, actually. Like, you killed your con, how fucking dare you? You left us Texas bronies without a con. It's like, well, go eat some dicks, please. But anyways.
Anyway.
Yeah, it was funny, though, because, like, yeah, a lot of the stuff that she recounts, like, how weird it was that the fandom, basically, people were famous for being fans of the fandom. And how the fandom's genesis of 4chan and how irony became sincerity. Like, the video we're discussing here is an hour and 11 minutes long. So, like, it's actually a significant overview and is very interesting to hear, like, another person's perspective who went through the same shit. Like, talking about how musicians had become very prominent in the community. And it's like, at one point, they actually had, like, a small group of musicians that toured around the country going to various cons one year. And how they were able to basically fund themselves by, like, people buying merch and CDs and shit. It was like a shoestring tour, but they got to do it once. And then, like, how she, Jenny Nicholson, had someone who was impersonating her at Fiesta Equestria one year, which is funny because I was at that con for that one.
I totally forgot that that had happened. And I was like, oh, that's right. That happened to her. She had to tweet, no, that's not me. I'm not at that con.
And how, like, that really resulted in a lot of mega huge egos as well. I mean, like, yeah, it's a fandom where you can gain notoriety as being an impersonator of other fandom people. Like, that's that's bizarre because this person had faked their credentials to get made a community guest to come to this convention. And they got found out, like, on day two, but, like, did the con pay for them a room? Did they get, I mean, they got at least a free badge, probably, for being a community guest. So, like, and they was like, yeah, well, she ran off into the distance, never to be seen again. We don't know who it was. I was like, well, that's fucking wild. And that was directly related to her because it was someone impersonating her, Jane Nicholson.
Yeah.
I'm also very grateful that, like, they didn't use any footage from, like, the original BronyCon, the one in January 2012, because I would not have wanted to see myself in the video. Was – I did see a couple people that I knew in the video, and I mentioned in there, like, one person was like, hey, look, it's me. And another person was very upset that there was video of them included in there. And they were just, like, standing on the stage during a charity auction. They're like, oh, God, I did not want to see myself in this video. Fuck. And I'm like, I completely understand that too, because this is another person who's basically bounced out. Like, don't talk to me. I don't exist. I'm not this horse person anymore. And again, I don't blame them for that.
Yeah.
You know, I talked a little bit about how, like, the fans of the fandom got their thing, that there was lots of questions about just giant egos in the community and all that fun stuff. And it's like, yeah, I know what they're talking about.
And the fucking brony documentary was covered,
too. Yeah, like, actually, one big thing that she kind of owns up to is the fact that looks back with regret on some of the stuff she made. Because, like, the Pinkie Pie character in Friendship is Witchcraft is like, oh, yeah, she's a gypsy and yada yada. But obviously, you know, the feelings on that has changed, and people are like, actually, don't use that phrase. It is a slur against Romani people. And she's like, the only reason this stuff's still around is that people re-uploaded the videos after Hasbro striked them. And she was like, you'd think that in the future this would be dead and buried, but no, in fact there's a small fandom on fucking TikTok where there's people who dress up in cosplay and emote to the songs. God damn it, why won't this die?
Yeah, they're like remixing Pinkie's Brew.
And it's like, they might not even know what this is even from, because the originals are slightly lost to time. And yet.
Yeah. And they were, the thing is though, like, I hope she's doing well for herself, because like, they were really well made. Like, they did some original animation, they did some repurposing, but, you know, original animation, recutting, editing, voice acting, multiple characters, writing and performing original songs. Like, they were really creative, and they put a lot of work into them. And I could see why Hasbro copyright struck them, because they looked like professional grade, you know? And it'd be really easy to accidentally watch an episode of Friendship is Witchcraft, and if you didn't know better, think it was the real show.
Yeah, and, like, she does go into some criticism of the fandom, too. Like, specifically, you mentioned the Brony Doc and how, like, one of the fandom's problems was that they were so fucking scared of anybody thinking of them as gay. Like, yeah. She includes a montage.
And I remember saying that at the time that we watched the Brony Doc, that I was like, it's really off-putting how many people are like, I'm totally not gay, I just really like this show. And I'm like, why you gotta fucking qualify it like that? Yeah, and
she has like 6 or 7 instances in this video of people being like, I'm not gay, but I like the show. And then brings up a dark little bit that I don't think any of us really remembered until she brought it up, was like the ongoing saga of the child Lyle, who's a young kid who liked the show and was afraid that because his dad's a conservative prick that he wouldn't be accepting of his kid. And yet, you know, they go to the con and, you know, an adult mentions like, yeah, you know, it's good that our kids trust us enough to tell us they like this stuff. It's not traditional, but it's good. And Lyle's dad's like, he didn't tell me. And then that's kind of the end of that kid's story. And it turns out, like, there's a little footnote in the credits that, and Lyle was sent to boarding school.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a good thing. Like, boarding schools in the United States are not like boarding schools in England. They send kids away and they're abusive. They're not good. So, you know, rest in fucking peace, Lyle. I don't think you would have had a good time.
He was like 16.
Yeah. I think when the chubby little nerd kid who happened to like My Little Pony. And, well, I think I have a copy of the fucking Bronies Doc somewhere around here just because, like, I got a copy at the time, but I know we watched it too.
Yeah, we did.
But honestly, like, in retrospect, it was made by bronies for bronies by underpaid bronies, and only paints the fandom as like, no, we're all just a bunch of very normal straight white guys. It's cool. And they're all, you know, every brony is, you know, neurodivergent of some flavor, which is not true either. But in hindsight, it's like, wow, this is actually really shitty, huh? And, like, I had completely put that out of my memory because, you know, I was not, like, invested in that shit. But you are right. Like, the fandom, the pony fandom was incredibly straight. Like, extremely, extremely, extremely straight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, probably,
I mean, they came out of being a bunch of 4chan bros.
Yeah. So, like, you're all dudes that wanted to fuck the horses, and they couldn't imagine like anybody, the characters being gay together. Like, I remember early on that the fact that there was fan fiction that put two female characters together in a relationship, like shipping stuff, that was a scandal. Like, how dare you? You're sullying the good, clean nature of this. And I'm like, there's canon married couples on the show. They fucked and had a kid. Mm-hmm. Had two kids.
It's like, and that's so weird to me that, like, in a show where the main cast is 6 females, that fans would freak out if you start pairing them off. Like, people just do that. If there's 6 or 7 characters on a TV show, people start pairing them off in fanfic. And they're all girls in this one show. So, of course, they're going to be lesbian horses. It's just weird to me that that was, like, a thing. And I thought straight guys were all about seeing chicks together anyway. So, what was the fucking problem, you know?
I don't even know, man. It is pointed out, too, that the last BronyCon sure did have a lot of Dakamakuras available.
Holy fuck, like... I mean, you think, wow, there was a lot of pillowcases for sale at that con. You think that, it's an exaggeration. And then you see her panning around, and it's like, oh my god. Like, every other booth, the largest booths, the ones with the most prominent displays, they're all dockies. And they're not crotch tits and pussies out, but it's really obvious what is supposed to be like a more sultry, you know, look or pose.
Well, not only a lot of them do have adult versions. And, like, the... Mm-hmm. Specifically the ones she calls out is, like, those are the CMC. That's fucking creepy. Like, I can guarantee you that there's adult versions of those, too.
Yeah, like, even if there isn't, you know, the fact that it's, like, an underage pony who's, like she says, they're, like, supposed to be, like, 10-year-olds looking at you sultrily, whether the genitals are showing or not. It's fucking creepy to do that to a character.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's nothing at all mature or sexy about those characters' personalities in the show. And to sexualize that is very... Ugh.
Yeah, like
libertarian.
So,
you know, very libertarian.
she did go a little bit in, you know, that kind of that side of the fandom at the time, and like, yeah, I mean, it's true that was there, and you know, it is fair to say that the Brony fandom is now pretty much dead and buried, and thank God for that. Like, you know, 2020, there was like the last gasp of a few cons, but at this point, like, what's the fucking local pony con whose name I can't remember right now.
Harmony Con.
Like, their hotel died. The Crown Plaza is closed and no more. Like, it's not an active hotel, so, like, that con's probably dead in the fucking ground.
So, and they had their 2020 con, right? Because it was in, like, February?
Yeah, it was prior. It was, like, 2 weeks before Furry Fiesta. And, like, I was there briefly to assist my parents, but, like, I could not stick around. I was just, like, totally not there for it.
Yeah. So if they come back in 2021, they're going to have to find a new con. And frankly, there's not going to be cons in February of 2021.
Yeah, so it's just kind of like 2020 killing off, like 2020 canceling all the cons sucks ass, but 2021 finally killing off the in-person Brony conventions is kind of a blessing too. Like, let that fandom go. You can be a horse fan and still be in the furry community, you know. You can even keep your pony Sona. It's fine.
I guess not someone that I would quote on the regular, but Kylo Ren, kill the past, let it die.
Yeah. So, it's an hour, 11 minutes, and, like, I found it perfectly fine. Like, I was playing Final Fantasy XIV and had it running in a second window.
Mm-hmm.
Just listening
to it. I was working. I was doing my day job, and I just had my cell phone perched on top of my keyboard, between the keyboard and the monitor, and was just listening to her while I was working. And, you know, it was a fine way to pass the time, made the day go by a little faster. Let me ask you something real quick. Have you watched the Fandom documentary yet?
The one with Ash Cody and Chip Fox? Yes. I have not had a chance to do that yet. Like, I actually, turns out I physically ordered a Blu-ray,
mm-hmm.
which is great because... Oh, wait, no, I have a PlayStation 4. Duh. I was like, how the fuck am I going to watch that? I have a PlayStation 4 and a PlayStation 3. I was like, I don't have a disc drive on my PC, but I do have a PS4.
So, and it's on YouTube, so you can watch it for free anyway.
True.
But anyway, what I was going to say was, if you had watched it, I was going to be like, kind of compare and contrast the Brony documentary with the Fandom documentary.
Well, why don't we plan that for next week, and I'll make sure to watch that in the interim.
Okay, yeah, because, God, should we rewatch the Brony doc? In the meantime, man.
That would be, like, something... That would just, like, the comparison and contrast in talking about those two episodes would be an episode in themselves. Revisiting the Brony doc and comparing that to, like, the Fandom doc, and then comparing it to also this Jenny Nicholson doc, like, that would be a lot, because you'd have, like, the unfailingly positive Brony doc, this doc, and then the general history of the furry fandom that's present in the furry fandom doc that Ash Cody did.
Yeah, I'd say it's pretty positive, but, like, it's... it seems a lot less cringe. In retrospect, like, a lot of the brony stuff is kind of makes you go, ugh. But, like, I don't know. Also, it's that sexuality is not a problem in the fandom documentary, because it's like, yeah, furries are, like, 80% queer. So, you know, no one's talking about how straight they are. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with being a straight furry, but, you don't have people be like, no, I'm totally not like that at all. You know, no one's saying that. And I think it's a little more honest. But yeah, it's been 5 or 6 years, I guess, since the Brony Doc came out and we watched it. So I wonder what we said about it at the time.
Like, it's certainly, we watched it and it was like, yeah, it's okay, but we were also probably a lot less critical of it at the time, too. Like,
yeah,
from like, perspective, and just, like, I was still involved in the community at that time.
Yeah, and, like, I actually found the animation and the song by John Delancey amusing at the time, and then looking back on it, you're kind of like, wow, yeah.
It's like, huh. Like,
that was, like, a huge cash grab, huh?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And, like, actually, the documentary does go into it further that, like, John Delancey did that for cash grab, and, like, he underpaid people, and, like, certain people were paid on contingency of sales, and when the previews got sent out, it was immediately pirated, because that's what bronies did, and that resulted in them stopping all production and canning, you know, hundreds of hours of footage that they already had. So people, like, either got paid very little or not at all for that, too. John Delancey,
I'm sure a lot,
money.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people were just doing it as a volunteer thing to do a Brony project. But I also don't really believe the team's whole "we're stopping all production" line, because it's like, it's a completed documentary.
Well, I mean,
you know?
They were planning on doing apparently more because they'd done a Kickstarter. So, I mean, I don't fucking know, and really, I don't care. It's just like,
yeah.
What would they have shown off? You know, they could have focused, you know, like, on queer members of the community, the trans members of the community. They could have done more on, like, non-white bronies, because I'm pretty sure that every single person they talk to in that documentary is white as a sheet. That would be something we could go back and watch, because fandom documentaries that try to market themselves to wider audiences are not very critical of their stuff, and, like, I'm pretty sure that there's not really any black bronies that were involved in the fandom documentary. I mean, so that's another one of those, And, like, I'm pretty sure that, like, everybody in the video is also male, except for a couple that there's, like, a couple of people that's, like, one pair that's a couple that's a dude and a chick. But again, I would have to go back and rewatch that. So that's a discussion for next time.
Yeah. That'll be an interesting, quote-unquote, use of our time.
Hey, I mean, what else are we doing right now? We're not going out and partying.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, what could you do? You could look at Twitter and doomscroll, or you can watch the Brony Doc and look at Twitter and doomscroll at the same time. All right, well, I think that basically covers everything that we wanted to hit on this week. Unless you had anything else, was. So
we released a new book and it sold very well.
Oh, yeah. You had, which one was it?
A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking.
Okay.
By T. Kingfisher, a.k.a. Ursula Vernon. And we were selling that through our non-furry site, but it is also on the Fur Planet website and on the Big River website and everywhere fine books are sold. You can get a copy of it. But it's about a 14-year-old mage who only has magic that works on bread and baked goods. So her familiar is a 200-year-old starter that she accidentally, like, magicked into having sentience.
Cool.
And one of her companions is a stale gingerbread man cookie who rides around on her shoulder. Occasionally has to hold onto her hair to keep from falling off during actions.
That's cute.
It's and he's on the cover. It's really cute. You know, it starts off with a dead body, but it is a YA book, so it's one of those probably good for 10 to 12-year-olds, but adults can read it and totally enjoy it. Her writing style is super delightful. So, you know, a lot of furries actually know who Ursula is, because she goes to AC every year. She has a lot of furry friends. Digger was published by Sofa Wolf.
So if you like fantasy, it's sort of magical type of things with a lot of whimsy like that, you'd totally enjoy this. We also finally put out, I don't know if mentioned before, put out the audiobook edition of Minor Mage, which was her previous book about a 12-year-old boy who's a mage, who has a armadillo familiar. So that one has a talking armadillo in it, which is very cool. And you can find that on Audible, the audiobook version.
Very cool. All right.
So yeah, that was our big news. Oh, we'll have more new shit going up. I've got more projects that are pretty much done, and one I've already got in print, which is it's an all femboy comic anthology. It takes place at a fantasy medieval type universe. So yeah, I'll get that on the website.
Is it wrong to pick up twinks in a dungeon?
Yeah, there are many twinks, and I think there are dungeons.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so many twinks.
So if you like this show and would like to contribute to our continued existence, well, not really. Just if you'd like to throw a couple bucks our way, you can go to patreon.com/healthpawscast. If you want to send us emails, you can send us emails at southpawscast@gmail.com. I had someone who's like, hey, what's the email address? And it's like, gave it to them and they're, all right, cool. And they didn't write in this week. So, oh well, I did check. And you can find me on twitter.com until Twitter decides to go to a paid model at Savern Drake.
Mm-hmm. Just follow my company on Twitter. It's @FurPlanet. I would rather you just follow the company account so I can sell your books. And go to FurPlanet.com to buy the books, and BadDogBooks.com for the electronic books, which we sell in Kindle and EPUB format, which is useful on all other e-readers, including iPhones and iPads and stuff.
Very good.
And that's about it for me. The show has a Twitter also, South Podcast. We don't use it very often. I'll occasionally tweet a meme or something amusing that comes up in the show chat.
Yep.
But you can follow us there if you want also.
Also lets you know when the free episodes hit the main feed, so that's useful if you aren't subscribed. So you should totally like and subscribe, because if you're a wolf.
Yes.
So on that note, good night.
And wash your hands.